This is Scott Burnham at the University of Montana School of Law. Today I want to talk about choice of law. This is the question of which jurisdiction's law the courts will apply to resolve the substantive issue. Now, it's not the same question as where the case will be heard, sometimes called choice of forum. That determination is made according to the rules of civil procedure. With one exception, you may be able to provide in the contract that suit must be brought in a particular jurisdiction. But again, that only decides where the case is heard. What I want to address is, once you have resolved the question of jurisdiction, that is, once it has been decided which court is hearing the case, then what law applies? Now, this is often the issue in common law cases heard in federal court under diversity jurisdiction, because according to the Erie Doctrine, there is no federal common law. And by definition, in a diversity case is a choice between the law of two states. But the issue can also arise in state court as well. Now, in a case governed by a contract, the parties have the power to determine the choice of law in their contract. But this freedom of contract to choose the law is subject to two general restrictions. First, the law chosen by the parties can't offend the public policy of the jurisdiction whose law would apply in the absence of a choice of law clause. And second, the law chosen must have some reasonable connection to the jurisdiction whose law they choose. Let me give you an example of that I was sitting in my office one day and I got a call from a lawyer in Houston, Texas, and he said, we want you to be an expert for us in Montana law. And I said, well, what's the case about? And they said, well, it's a dispute between the city of Austin in Austin, Texas, and the Decker Coal Company, a New York corporation with its principal headquarters in Denver. So I said, well, what's Montana law got to do with it? And he said, well, the parties put in a choice of law provision stating that Montana law would govern the contract. And I said, well, what's the connection with Montana? And he said, well, the coal comes from Montana. So that was enough to allow the parties to choose Montana law because it had some connection with the contract. I never did find out why they chose Montana law. It was probably a compromise that they were negotiating. Each wanted its own law of the jurisdiction each was familiar with, and they settled on Montana. By the way, could they have compromised on Oklahoma and said, well, here's a state that's halfway between Colorado and Texas, let's choose that law? The answer is probably no, because it would have no reasonable connection with the transaction. Which raises an interesting footnote, by the way, that presently there's a revision of Article 1 that's making the rounds of the state legislatures. And the uniform version of that revised Article 1 does away with the requirement of a reasonable connection. But the states don't seem to be ready for that, and the states that have enacted revised Article 1 have not enacted that provision. So most states are sticking with the rule that the law chosen has to have some reasonable connection with the transaction. Okay, so what happens if the parties haven't chosen the law? Then each cause of action has its own rules for choice of law. By the way, you can find them in the Restatement of Conflicts of Law or any treatise on conflicts of law. For example, in a property dispute involving real property, the general rule would be it would be the law of the jurisdiction where the real property is located. Or in a torts case, it would be the place that has the most significant relationship to the occurrence or the issue, often where the tort occurred. Now, of course, the restatement is not mandatory authority. And you'll find in some areas that jurisdictions are split between following an old choice of law rule and a modern rule. And as often with the case with these things, the old rule is very formalistic, which makes it easy to apply, but at the price of being somewhat arbitrary. The modern rule usually consists of trying to weigh a number of factors, which may appear more just, but it's also more messy. For example, take choice of law in contracts. The old rule was the place where the last event occurred that resulted in there being a contract. Did you get that one? The choice of law would be the jurisdiction where the last event occurred that resulted in there being a contract. Well, you know from contract law that the last event that occurs that results in there being a contract is generally acceptance, because when there's acceptance, the contract is formed. Sometimes, by the way, drafters would get around that rule. They would say something like, well, this contract is subject to the approval of the Home Office in Omaha. And then when the Home Office approved, that would be the last act, and that state's law would apply. Now, the modern rule requires determining which jurisdiction has the most significant relationship with the terms of the contract. Things like where the parties are located, where was the contract formed, what's the subject matter of the contract, where is it going to be performed, and so forth. A good example, by the way, that you probably encountered in contracts law about choice of law in a contracts case came up in the famous chicken case for Fregelement Importing versus BNS International. Here's what Judge Friendly, this again was in the Southern District of New York, so it's in a federal court, and the here's what Judge Friendly has to say about choice of law. Plaintiff says that notwithstanding that its acceptance was in Switzerland, New York law controls under the principle of Rubin v. Irving Trust Company. Defendant does not dispute this and relies on New York decisions. I shall follow the apparent agreement of the parties as the applicable law. Now, what Judge Friendly is saying there is that there's a conflict between the old rule and the new rule, because when he says, notwithstanding that its acceptance was in Switzerland, he's suggesting that the last act that resulted in there being a contract acceptance took place in Switzerland. Therefore, under the old choice of law rule for contracts, Swiss law would apply. Whereas Rubin v. Irving Trust Company uses the significant contacts test, the modern rule. So under that test, New York law would apply because most of the negotiating and other events took place in New York. And apparently the parties agreed that New York law would apply. By the way, a interesting footnote on that. If this case arose today, a dispute between a New York corporation and a Swiss corporation, which law would apply? Well, the answer is the UN Convention on International Sale of Goods, which applies when the residences of the two parties are in countries that have both agreed to the UN Convention, and both the US and Switzerland have agreed to the convention, so the UNCISG would apply. That, by the way, brings us back to freedom of contract, because a lot of American lawyers don't want their contracts governed by the UNCISG. They're not particularly familiar with it, so they put in a choice of law clause directing the court to apply the law of some U.S. jurisdiction rather than this law that they're not familiar with. And again, you have freedom to do that. And incidentally, you may wonder, well, how does the court become educated in this body of law if it applies, for example, Swiss law? Well, of course, the answer is the lawyers would have to do it. The lawyers would have to educate the court as to what Swiss contract law involves. And that's another reason that the lawyers probably prefer more familiar law. And in a case like Fregelement, they wanted to argue the law of New York. Okay, so in conclusion then, for purposes of first year law study, each time you see a case in federal court on diversity or see that a court is applying some law other than its own, ask how that choice came to be made and see if it's either chosen by the parties or chosen by the court based on one of these choice of law principles. And then for purposes of your later study in law school, you may wish to take the elective called Conflicts of Law that discusses this interesting issue in more detail.